Hello and welcome to episode 59 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. I'm Amy Crawford, founder of the holistic ingredient brand and lifestyle store, curated exclusively for women. This podcast series is dedicated to women seeking to enrich their lives with every drop of zest. I'm deeply passionate about fostering comfort and confidence as we explore the multifaceted world of womanhood together. In today's episode, I have a fascinating, if not confronting, discussion with the founder of One Seed Organic Perfume, Liz Cook. Liz launched One Seed in 2009 after first building and selling three natural skincare boutiques in South Australia. Liz has been part of the natural and organic beauty world for over 20 years, formulating natural fragrances for her own brands, as well as for other skincare and wellness brands worldwide. Liz has a passion for organic living and wellness, and aside from her work with One Seed, is also a practicing clinical nutritionist and speaker. This episode will open your eyes to the concerning lack of regulation in the perfume industry and bring awareness to the products you invite into your home and onto your skin. I hope you enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by the stunning One Seed Organic Perfume range, made from 100% natural plant-derived ingredients with technical perfumery know-how. No longer do you need to compromise your health for the luxurious perfume you love to wear. You'll find some of One Seed's best-selling fragrances in my online store now, available in sample packs, rollerballs, and beautiful glass spray bottles. Now, Liz, it is such a pleasure to have you here with me today, and I am so looking forward to this discussion. But I just want to start by saying a huge thank you for bringing perfume back into my life. It's just discovering your brand last year. So it was 2023 when I discovered One Seed. Was the first time I've used a spray perfume, non-synthetic one, in about 14 years. So thank you.
Pleasure. And that is actually the whole reason that we're here, because we hear this story a lot from people who say, I got rid of it 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and they think there's nothing else. So this is exactly why we exist. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, no, well, it's such a pleasure to have you here. Now, I'm really actually firstly interested in hearing a little bit more about your journey and how it led to you setting up One Seed. And I understand you've had experience working with skincare boutiques, formulating skincare. What took you to perfume?
Well, the journey for that, I mean, I started out kind of in skincare, dabbling when I was probably as young as 13. And I've always been a questioner. So right back then, even I was, you know, starting to buy skincare like from Avon and all yeah. these small, you know, and Body Shop and so on. And I started to think, why would I pay this at this place and, you know, a tenth of the price somewhere else? And I started to investigate ingredients and so on. So even as a young teenager, I started to look at mixing my own bits and pieces together. That's sort of how I started in the very beginning. By the time I was 24. Well, by the time I was 20, I'd started a very, very, very small brand, just sort of to family and friends, and that was around skincare. And then by the time I was 24, I kind of gave up all my uni career and nursing and social science and all the rest of it, and just went full on into this game. And then I started formulating for a brand of my own. So I opened a boutique in Adelaide at 24 years old. And then wow. over that period of time started helping other companies with, we would now call it, you know, quote unquote, clean formulas, because nobody was really doing that back then, because I was very passionate about transparency even back then, and where brands would label their product as natural but still have really questionable ingredients. So I started kind of consulting small brands back then, and as time progressed, with that particular company I was running, I started to formulate for other companies or work with other companies to tweak their formulas. So my passion definitely started out in skincare. Mm. The perfume facet came along. I ended up with three natural beauty boutiques in Adelaide. And over the course of that, we saw thousands of people come through the doors who would say, I've now made the switch to everything natural, shampoo, skincare, everything else. And they started bringing me their bottles of perfume, because one of the big things that we were doing back then as a company was we were custom blending skincare for people. So they would come in and say, I've got dry skin, I've got rosacea, and we would on the spot use a natural based product, use essential oils, carrier oils, extracts, and so on, and blend for them within 10, 15 minutes.
Wow.
With their own. Yeah. I mean, I think back now, I'm like, that was so forward.
Right.
What you do in your 20s, you just kind of, you don't think, you just do. And yeah. So that I was just doing, and it was incredible. And I wasn't thinking about perfume then, but I've started to see people come in going, well, I've switched everything over. I'm now not using anything synthetic, but how about this perfume? And it happened on, you know, half a dozen occasions at first, and I thought, okay, this is a bit random, but it just kept happening. And so at that point, I think we were about 5 years into the business, and I started to investigate what it was to create a perfume as opposed to just blending essential oils, which I'd done a lot of for the previous sort of 10 years. Started with a couple of little experimental formulas while I had that company. And then when I sold that company in 2007, I essentially sold all the IP aside from the perfume formulas that I was working on, because I could see that there was a massive, massive gaping hole in the market. Nobody was doing natural perfume. So sold that business, took the perfume formulas, ended up getting rid of those anyway, spent the next 18 months really researching natural perfume and experimenting and having little groups get together to see what I was working on and see what was translating to the consumer market and not. And then in 2009, launched OneSeed with our first three perfumes and literally the first natural perfume company in Australia, May 2009. And I believe at the time there was two others in the world. One was Mandy Aftel with Aftelier, who's still going. And that was it. It was basically the three of us in the whole world.
Wow.
So I started.
So interesting. Can I ask, so you were 24 when you set up a shop in Adelaide? That's a very gutsy step for a 24-year-old, isn't it? I find that amazing. You really have to back yourself to set up a shop, don't you?
And it's funny because I've got a son who's 21 and I think I was only 3 years older than him. Right. It didn't occur to me at the time. It was a gutsy thing for a 24-year-old. But I say I've never really been risk averse in terms of those types of risks. Like I've never jumped out of a plane and I still wouldn't. So those risks I don't love. But for things like this, I do. I back myself. I still back myself. And I think I love to understand what drives people, what motivates people. And that was a lot of it for me. Like I knew that there were conversations starting and I just thought, why can't I be the one to actually this to fruition? So yeah, gutsy, but I still kind of approach things that way.
I know this is slightly off tangent because I know a lot of women, you know, a lot of the conversations I have on this podcast and certainly recently around, you know, again, having the courage to back yourself and make big decisions. And do you think, I mean, you've said that you're a researcher. So can I ask before, so this will set you and I apart. I'm not, right? But I have a really good sort of strong gut feel about things. And so I go, oh, that feels good. I'm going to do it and I'm just going to figure it out as I go. When you make big decisions, are you making them with great sort of a great sense of sort of clarity and confidence because it's so well researched?
No, I think I do both. I'm definitely very instinctual as well, but I back myself. I trust my gut instinct. But I always am inclined to slightly hesitate to kind of lean into the quietness and get a really strong sense of whether something's right or not. So sometimes the research can say, yeah, it's right, but your gut says not yet. And so I'm probably almost 50-50 depending on the circumstance.
Yeah, sure.
Research is awesome, but research doesn't take into account the feel of the current environment, for example, or the way that human nature might shift and change with social situations or, you know, world economies and all of that sort of thing. So I'd say that I'm research and instinct driven both.
Yeah, sure. Okay, interesting. So When so from the 24-year-old to setting up One Siege, you had some great experience to help really to propel you once you made that decision. Actually, what I did want to ask is, what were the perfumes? Do I know any of them? Have you got them still?
So the one that has not changed at all is Freedom. So our first three were Freedom, Hope, and Courage. We still have all three perfumes. Courage has not changed very much at all. Hope has changed probably about 30%. But yeah, Freedom is exactly the same.
Right.
In our top three sellers, well, obviously when we had three, it was our top seller. It's never fallen out in 14 and three quarter years that we've been in business. It's never fallen out of the top three or four.
Right.
So that's nice.
Wow. Congratulations, Freedom.
Yeah. Yourself.
Now, so Liz, I'd love to know, love for you to share what sets One Seed apart from conventional perfume brands? I'll leave that there. It's a big question, I know.
It's a big question. Look, there's a couple of major things that set us apart from conventional perfume that you'd find at David Jones or Mecca or anywhere else, any of the brands that you might have been buying for the last, 20, 30, 40 years or 10 years. First is the ingredients that we use. So we use a palette of 100% natural ingredients, whereas 99.9% of the perfumes that are on the market are 99 to 100% synthetic. So we don't use synthetics, and I'm absolutely adamant about that. Even when I do custom work for companies, which I still do, I make it really clear at the start that these are the parameters. We will never ever use synthetics, even if we think that, oh, this kind of needs to be fleshed out with something that doesn't come from nature. It's not in my wheelhouse. It's not in my values at all. So 100% natural every time. And if we can't make it natural, we won't do it. That's number one. Number two is transparency. And this is a massive one because the perfume industry has always been, even for thousands of years, since ancient Egypt, has been shrouded in secrecy. And it's part of its appeal, I think. We do love the idea that perfume is very ethereal and emotive and poetic and all of that. And so I think there is a vested interest in consumers and in brands to keep something sort of poetic and secretive about it. That adds to its appeal. But the problem with that is that there is actually legislation that protects companies' IP, so they don't actually have to reveal to you what they're putting in your perfume bottle. And in most other industries, consumer industries in the world, that doesn't exist. So, I mean, aside from pharmaceutical industry, where you can say, paracetamol is 50% paracetamol and 50% other unknown ingredients, you can't say that in any other frequently used consumer product. You would never be able to say that in food. You can't even say that in skincare. So the perfume industry has something called trade secret legislation, which means that if I have a formula that I deem to be important to my IP and to the value of my business, I don't have to list anything that I call a trade secret. So usually what that means that is that every ingredient used to create an actual fragrance component of that perfume is comes under the banner of the term fragrance or parfum. So it will look like a perfume ingredient list is quite simple. Often it'll say water or aqua, parfum or fragrance, and maybe a preservative or something. You think, oh, it's three ingredients. But actually inside this banner of parfum, you could have commonly anywhere between 50 to 200 ingredients
Wow.
into that banner. So we don't know what companies are actually putting forward. So what we're spraying on our skin feels much simpler than it actually is. And that's probably the two major ways that we differ from what's actually out there conventionally.
Okay, so I've got two questions here. Why, when, am I right in saying that the reason a lot of these commercial brands are creating perfume out of a synthetic is A, because it's cheaper? Would that be fair?
Yes,
Yeah,
absolutely.
cheaper. And also, would I be right in saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong, synthetic perfumes, whilst not necessarily good for our health or the environment, will have generally a longer staying power.
Yes,
and absolutely. So would that be one? That would be one of the main reasons they continue to use some of these synthetics, so they can sit on our skin and last.
Yes, absolutely. They're definitely two key reasons. So the first one you talked about was cost. Absolutely, it's around a tenth of the cost on average to create a synthetic perfume than it is to create a natural. So
really,
and mind-blowing figure on this one, and everybody who's currently loving their $400 bottle of perfume, and you know, and I don't want to make anyone feel bad about this. There's a lot of things that go into that $400 bottle of perfume that make us want to be part of the story. But I think it's important for people to know that the cost of the actual juice in that bottle, even for your high-end perfumes, is around $3 to $5 a bottle. So regardless of what your end price is, you might buy $19.95 Chemist Warehouse knockoff of something, or, and I don't mean to say it's Chemist Warehouse, but let's just say pharmacy knockoff, or you spend $400 on the real deal, the cost of the juice is still anywhere from $3 to $5. So whereas to make a natural perfume for the same kind of formula, obviously using naturals though, you'd be anywhere from $25 to $30 for the same thing. And some of the ingredient costs vary by up to a thousandfold. So we use something called ambrette seed, which comes from a particular hibiscus, and the cost of that is $28,000 a kilo for that ingredient. But if you were buying the synthetic version of ambrette, like a musk ketone, a musk ambrette, you'd be paying about $280 a kilo.
Right.
So there's a huge discrepancy in the cost of ingredients. Obviously, that changes the profitability, and for a major company, it's not appealing to have to spend 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times more on a product. So I get that. The second point you made is about staying power. That's absolutely true. You will never get as long out of a natural perfume as you do from a synthetic. Mm. And that's particularly because, like when you peel, for example, you peel an apple, you walk away to answer the phone, you come back and the apple's brown. That's oxidation. The same exact thing happens when you use natural ingredients. You spray them on your skin. Biology would say that those ingredients need to start breaking down. That's how biology works. And so biologically, you can't have a perfume that has all natural ingredients that will stay for 12 to 24 hours, or sometimes these synthetics will last, you know, for a week on your jacket or whatever. Synthetic ingredients, for the most part, don't readily break down in the environment. That's a whole nother story, which you would be like, okay, there's an interesting thing that we need to research. But because of that, it means that they stay on your skin a lot longer and they don't readily break down. So, you know, then you're talking about issues of absorbing these chemicals, environmental contamination, hormone disruption, all of that kind of stuff. But what you do get is a perfume that smells pretty much the same from the time you spray it till probably the next day when you wake up and say, oh, I remember that party because I'm still smelling it on my skin.
Yeah, yeah.
So those two things are key. And there's a third one which just slipped my mind, which I should know. Oh, talking too much and forgetting what I'm actually
saying.
You're
doing a wonderful job. It's so interesting. So for you, sorry, Liz, you go.
I'll say this before I forget because, you know, the third one is controllability. So there is a lot of variability in naturals, and I think one of the pressures that's on the commercial perfume world is to constantly deliver a product that's identical to the previous batch. And that's for the average consumer that's buying perfume, you would have no idea if it's, you know, 99.5% the same as the previous batch. But people who've been buying the same perfume consistently over years, if you're changing things, people will call you out on it. In the natural world, you can expect that there's going to be very, very slight, most people would never notice, variations between batches because of the time of the harvest of, for example, rose petals or jasmine or cedarwood or whatever, time of the harvest, the amount of rainfall, all of these things subtly affect the nuances of a fragrance. Those things aren't commercially acceptable, and so large companies don't accept the risk that
sure. And so for you as a business owner, it really is about staying true to your guiding principles and values, isn't it, here? Because it would be so easy for you to go, you know what, I could make more profit here, so I'm not going to disclose all of my ingredients and I'm going to do it 25% cheaper.
Exactly. And I've seen companies do that. I've seen companies start out as natural and then realize the profitability is not as much. And it's not because they're greedy, but they might find, well, it's not as successful as I want it to be because it's hard to bring in a new perfume and there's 19,000 perfumes on offer in the world. You bring in another one, it's really hard to get seen. So I understand why companies feel that they need to compromise, but I've seen too many companies go down that path because it's a hard road. And so, yes, for us, we're always values driven. I would rather make 10 times less profit, but constantly rock up with the same set of values and principles and consistency. And then our customers always know that they can rely and depend on the fact that we say what we say we do, we always do.
Yes, which takes me to the next question, which is around your trademark.
Yeah.
So your company's trademarked Nothing to Hide as a guarantee for listing all the ingredients in your products.
Yes, Nothing to Hide is a policy that we've put together that means absolutely every single ingredient is listed in the product. We won't ever even use an ingredient, let's say one drop in a 20-kilo batch. We won't even exclude that from the ingredients list. So absolutely everything is on the label. If ever you have a question about an ingredient, you will always, always find it on the label. We're also, we're transparent also about percentage of organic ingredients. Obviously, everything is 100% natural, but not everything's available as a natural. So you'll even find on the website and on the
organic.
Yeah, and it'll say like 82.7% organic or whatever. And we're quick to change that if anything changes. So for us, it's about transparency from the procuring of the ingredients through to actually, selling the final product. There has to be transparency through the whole supply chain.
Yeah. Okay. And Liz, I'd be interested in hearing a little bit about some of the potential health risks associated with synthetic fragrances, and obviously how using natural alternatives can mitigate this risk. Will you be comfortable talking to some of those health risks?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got some cheat sheets on these. I'm happy to send them through to you later, and you can chuck them in the show notes or whatever you
want. Yeah, great.
I guess one of the biggest ones, and this is one that we are seeing in many, many ways, and we have lots of articles to this end on our journal as well if anybody wants more information, but a really massive one is the effect of synthetic ingredients on hormones. Now, when I say hormones, people automatically think about menopause or childbearing or whatever, but hormones is such a blanket term. It also includes things like insulin, for example. So what we're seeing as a result of, it's not just our exposure to perfume, but synthetic fragrance is so ubiquitous. Now, you can't walk into a mall without being squirted with something. It's every time you wash your hands. Sometimes it's you put in a bin liner and it's like lemon scented, which, by the way, is not actual lemon for anybody who's wondering. Everything seems to be scented. And to that end, we're finding now that that synthetic fragrance is now contributing as much to disease as car pollution. So we think it's kind of like it's taken a bit of a backseat and it's minor and I just spray my perfume once a day or once a week, but it's all the little things that add up. So it's the accumulative effect of synthetic fragrance in every facet of our life, as well as your accumulative effect over time. So a lot of these fragrance components are fat soluble. They stick around in our bodies for a long, long, long time. They're not readily broken down and they stay in the environment for a long time. So what we're finding is that there are significantly elevated statistics in relation to lots of hormonal issues. If you, anybody can look at this data, you can Google it and go to PubMed or whatever and have a look. But the research is showing that, for example, infertility in males, and I can't remember the exact statistic, but it's something astounding. Something like in the last, so don't quote me on this, but I encourage everyone to do research. In the last 25 years, we've seen such a massive dip in male infertility. It's something in the vicinity of like 30 to 40% drop in male infertility. We're also seeing like genital malformation of boys. We're seeing girls go through precocious puberty, which means you start puberty at like 8 or 9 or 10, which 10 maybe is sort of on the cusp, But when I was a kid, nobody was going through puberty at 9 years old. It was like 13 was kind of the average, maybe 11 if you were really young. But we've seen precocious puberty take, it's not even uncommon anymore. So a lot of girls are starting periods at 9 years old. And then infertility for females, you know, miscarriages, all that stuff. So yes, that is the sex hormone stuff. But what we're also seeing is a massive upswing in obesity, despite constant messaging around what is healthy, what is not. We know what good food is. We know how exercise is important. No need to reduce our stress. And yes, all of that stuff contributes. But there is a lot of research now suggesting that type 2 diabetes and obesity, there is a massive connection between phthalates, for example, and other endocrine disrupting chemicals, and these states, which are, you know, the statistics on diabetes, for example, are massive, including in populations you'd never see diabetes. Somebody who is fit, healthy, exercises regularly, is really, you know, doesn't look overweight at all. And you think, why have they got type 2 diabetes? So those are some of the things. I also, as a nutritionist, because I'm a functional nutritionist by trade as well and still do practice a little on the side, one of the big things in my practice is around mental health, and we're seeing massive impacts of synthetic fragrance on mental health, and how some of these components, and I'm saying synthetic fragrance, it's lots of chemicals that are in here. Some of these particular ingredients are having significant impacts on neurotransmitters, as well as their impact on, for example, fatty tissue in the brain. You know that the brain is made up of a lot of fatty tissue. Chemicals get stored anywhere where there's fat, fatty liver as well. If your liver is retaining chemicals, that also has a downstream effect on your mental health, or upstream, whichever way you want to go. For me, the biggest culprits and the things that we're seeing the most is it's the mental health stuff, the obesity and diabetes picture, and the sex hormone picture. And that's where I think if we're going to focus anywhere on the effect of synthetic fragrance, that's where we need to look the hardest and spend the most time, because that these things are urgent. Like, yeah. If we're going on this trajectory for another 25 years, I'm not sure that we're going to have the same kind of looking population as we do now. I think it's going to be very difficult for people to fall pregnant naturally. I think we're going to struggle with maintaining a healthy body on any level if we keep going down this path.
So, oh God, so many questions.
Yeah, I know you said we're going to stick to half an hour. I don't think we are, Amy.
I don't think we are, Liz. Sorry about that. I hope you haven't got any urgent meetings after this. You'll have to push them out. Right, now, there are so many questions. Okay, a couple of things. For people listening who are perhaps new to this discussion and the idea of synthetics, let's just list out some really typical household items. So when I think about it, so my experience with removing synthetic fragrance and sort of any sort of toxic chemicals from my home was about 14 years ago. I had chronic fatigue syndrome. I was debilitatingly sick. The last test that we did was to test my toxicity levels in my body. They were off the Richter scale. My doctor was very, very worried about me. He said, you need to go home today. And if I had it my way, I would have you pulling down the curtains and pulling up the carpet, anything that's been dry cleaned. He said, this is really urgent. And so I didn't have a choice then. I was desperate to get my life back and to get a job back and all those things. So I went around the house with a bin, and I cannot believe how much stuff went in the bin. He said, I want you to pick up every product, turn it around. So much fragrance. So anything from my Nivea body cream, all my perfumes, my lipsticks, my body wash, my soaps, my shampoo, conditioner, my washing up liquid, the washing powder, the nappy sand, or candles, everything.
Yeah. Yep, diffusers. Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. If you go through your home and you just make a list, even if you don't throw them out, if you observe yourself for 24 hours, go through your normal routine and keep a pen and paper in your pocket or your phone, and everything that has a smell, make a list, you know, put a little X besides the things that you know are not necessarily natural. I'm not sure how many there would be, but there would be dozens and dozens that you're using every day without even thinking about
it. Yes. Yeah. And so in my experience, it was a bit different because, again, it was kind of a critical health situation. And I think, as you know, what happens for a lot of us is we hit this critical health situation, and that's when we make the significant changes, because we're forced to, which is problematic, because often if we're just going about our day to day and we're feeling okay, we haven't got great energy, we're a bit blah, maybe we're putting on weight, you know, you don't think that this accumulation of all this kind of low level toxic stuff could really be having that much of a difference. But really what's happening is there's this building toxic burden, isn't there? And I actually read one of your journal articles which touched on this low dose hypothesis.
Yes.
Which is that, isn't it? This perception that people have that's just a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this.
Exactly. And unfortunately, no, it's not unfortunate. It's not surprising that we don't know anything about the chemicals that we're using on a daily basis, and that we trust the industries, I'm just saying industries at large, that make consumer goods to not sell us anything that's potentially toxic. But I think what we don't understand as consumers is that there's very little legislation in most industries which requires any level of safety, or any level of safety evaluation. So even for cosmetic ingredients, while there are bodies that regulate these to a certain extent, what we're seeing is that ingredients that do undergo testing, which is only about 25% of the ingredients, undergo very short-term testing. What we're testing for is skin reactions. We're testing for allergens or hypoallergenic activity or whatever. So you can say, oh, something's hypoallergenic. That doesn't mean it's not toxic. It costs about $1 million to put one ingredient under the microscope and test that, even for a short period of time. So, so it's almost impossible to expect industry to do all the testing for us. And so the government basically says, well, we'll let you self-regulate. So most industries are highly self-regulated, and that's absolutely the case with the fragrance industry. There are certain bodies that will, suggest certain ingredients shouldn't be used. But like we saw this with the tobacco industry, we knew that in the 60s, we knew that tobacco was causing cancer. And it wasn't until 1980, I believe it was exactly 1980, where the World Health Organization listed tobacco as a suspected carcinogen. And then I think it was 2000 where we said it's definitely a carcinogen. So we knew for 40 years, we knew without a shadow of a doubt that we were smoking and getting cancer, but it took 40 years. And so the same thing, exact same thing happens in the cosmetic industry and in every other industry. It's kind of like innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
But the problem that comes with that is we all end up sick and we don't know why. And the canary in the coal mine is singing, but nobody's listening. Mm. So self-regulation, I understand why it exists, but it's problematic because everything is innocent, but we're getting sick.
Yeah.
So there's a massive discrepancy between how things seem and how things actually are.
Sure. So going back a step, just to the listeners that I've possibly overwhelmed by suggesting that you might go around your house and throw every single product out, I don't necessarily suggest that's what you do. But I know that when I was on this journey, one thing that I would suggest to people when they ask me about it is, look, when you finished a product, to remove the overwhelm, when you finished a product, have a look at the back of the ingredients and just make a more natural choice when you replace it. And that's a really good way to do it.
I think so. I think, sometimes in these conversations they can be really overwhelming and yeah. People, especially like I know a lot of your audience are really healthy and trying very hard to be conscious about everything they do, especially when it comes to their kids, their grandkids or their hormone health or whatever. And we're all trying really, really hard. But I think exactly what you say makes sense. It's like don't rush out and feel like you have to now relieve yourself of this whole burden, because the pressure of the stress on your body is probably as problematic as every chemical that you're including in your life. So let's not freak out. Let's allow our nervous system to still be able to relax and do what it has to do. But I agree, when you run out of something, look for a better choice, look for a lower tox choice at very least. At best, the best thing you can do is find something that is natural and proven and the company has a good reputation for. But like you say, some people get to the point where they have multiple chemical sensitivity or chronic fatigue, and they do need to kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater and start again. For most of us, that doesn't make sense. But for people at that critical point, I think that's a really great idea. Alex Stewart from Low Tox Life has a really great idea. And I interviewed her on my podcast as the first guest a few years ago, which was awesome. But one of her suggestions, if anybody listens to her podcast, and she talks often about fragrance and different things, she says, get everything that's fragranced in your house, candles, everything that you suggested to Amy, everything that you use that's currently fragranced, put it in a box, put it in your shed for 3 or 4 weeks. Don't look at it. Think, you know, see how you feel. That's fine. But then bring everything out, put it all back in its place, use it as you were 3 or 4 weeks ago, and see if there's a difference between the way you feel now versus how you felt before. So for most people, they will notice an incredible difference. Sometimes it's because you may have noticed low level ick feeling before and not being able to put it down to anything. And as a nutritionist and understanding how the body works, I think often the body, it so tries hard to maintain homeostasis. You can feel okay. You can get through okay because the body's working things out, under enormous pressure, but you still feel okay. But it's when you remove those chemicals and you give your body a chance to breathe and to be in its natural rhythm that everything relaxes. Then expose yourself to those chemicals again and the body's like, oh, no, we've tried this one. We're not doing it again. So that's often what we see. But, yeah, I think the throw the baby out with the bathwater scenario isn't viable and we don't need that kind of pressure. So, get rid of one thing a day if you want to, or just swap things out as you run out. I think it's an awesome idea. And think where you 365 days from now, if you just swap things out as you run out, it would be a whole different looking beauty routine, health routine. It would be a different household.
Yes. So interesting what you just mentioned about Alex's suggestion, which is a brilliant one, because there's no question I didn't believe that I had a sensitivity to synthetic fragrance 14 years ago, but put me in a taxi now with a synthetic fragrance hanging tree, it's nausea. If someone walks into my home with a synthetic candle that hasn't even been lit, the smell through the box makes me feel nauseous. In other instances, like walking through mire, it's just an instant headache. You really do build up a lack of tolerance, don't you?
Yeah, funny, isn't it? We have this kind of theory sometimes, even about when people often say, oh, I was fine and then I went on holidays and then I got sick, and it almost seems like the holidays the culprit. Like, I shouldn't take holidays because holidays make me sick. But if you understand if you think about the duck paddling, for all they're worth, on the surface that duck looks fine, but underneath that the legs are going so, so hard, it's that kind of scenario. Like, our body will keep us as well as possible for as long as it possibly can until it gets completely depleted, which is that you are at. So ideally you don't let it get to that stage, and you listen to the small signals and you respond to the small signals. I forgot what your initial point was, and I forgot why I'm even saying this. I mean, something to say.
You made sense, it's okay. Now the other question, actually, that's how, it's a very big question, how, aside from people with wonderful organizations and messages like your own, and obviously, and we'll talk more about your future, but very clearly you're making inroads, which is just fantastic. But what else is it going to take? Because part of the issue, as with the skincare cosmetics industry, is money, isn't it? There's so much money. What you mentioned that in 20 years' time you feel concerned about our health.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
If we keep going in this way. So how can we possibly start slowing that trajectory? Having conversations like these, but
look, I think for us, we've been educating people about this particular issue since we started nearly 15 years ago, and it for the most part has been an uphill battle. But we've seen in the last 5 years, we've definitely seen a massive swing toward more natural products, generally for the skincare industry, cosmetics, for all facets of beauty and toiletries, everything, including for perfume. And you can see that because even the big companies are, they're often clean washing, but the fact that they're clean washing or green washing tells me that they realize that consumers are wanting a more natural product, or a product that is lower toxin. You know, obviously the term clean is massive these days, which don't get me started on that one.
Sorry to interrupt you, but do you mind just clarifying for the listeners that may not know the term clean washing or greenwashing?
Yeah, and we've just written an article about this week. But clean, so greenwashing used to be the term we would use when it was, let's say, 10 years ago, this whole swing toward a green product. So when we started to think about sustainability and environmental issues, you know, 10 to 20 years ago, we'd say that a product was green, and that was often in household products more than cosmetics. So then we would say greenwashing was where you would use marketing tactics and wording and poetry and visuals and whatever to make a product seem more green, so closer to nature, less toxic. The same thing has happened now, but clean is kind of like the modern bougie version of green. So clean makes it sound like we're doing everything in our power to give you a non-toxic product, which is an awesome way to behave, but the behavior in the product doesn't really match what's being said. So clean washing is when I say, this product is free from these 10 chemicals, and you go, awesome, there's no SLES, there's no parabens, that's fantastic, but they're not telling you what they actually
put in. Yeah, right. And so back to your point, Liz, what the very fact that companies are even trying to clean wash or green wash is a good sign, because they're recognising that consumers are much more conscious now about what they put on their bodies or in their bodies.
Absolutely. But I don't think that this movement is led from the front. I think it's absolutely led from the middle. So it means that small brands really have to take up the mantle of this. Small brands like us, for example, you're not going to see your big name fragrance houses lead the way. They're just not going to. So for us as consumers to expect that we'll just follow what the big companies are doing and surely eventually they'll do the right thing, it never ever works like that in health, in science. It's always, it usually starts as a grassroots movement, and industry will follow, you know, because we always have to follow the money with big industry. So it requires consumers to ask more of the brands that they love, and to be prepared to reject the brands that won't take their health seriously. It requires brands like One Seed, like lots of other natural perfume or skincare companies, wellness companies, to take a stand and to not compromise. And I think, I mean, it requires consumers to be educated, but again, we're all pretty tired. There's so much education and so much information. The education there's always going to be education around it, but how do we get consumers to start making better choices for their health, which then leads to a social movement? To be honest, I think the only way that that's going to happen at the moment is if influencers get involved, because that's kind of where, for some reason, we're all looking to Instagram and TikTok for the voices that we listen to. You know, it's like if Kim Kardashian, I'm telling you now, if Kim Kardashian went, I mean, because she's done this, you know, drugs to the diabetes drugs and got skinny, and that drug now sells out and even diabetics can't get the drug. I mean, it's crazy. But you think about the power of influence that these people have, it would only take somebody like Kim Kardashian or...
What about that woman called Taylor Swift?
Exactly. That's exactly where it's at. If Taylor Swift literally put out a tweet or a TikTok saying, I'm getting rid of all of the synthetic fragrance in my house and I'm not using synthetic, do you know what would happen to the world, at least to the 16 to 24-year-olds? Like, it would actually be a massive sweeping movement. So I think in this day and age, it's going to take a couple of influencers to make a massive dramatic shift in that way. But I think we're going to see incremental shifts. They're just not going to be big swings unless we can get big name people on board that have a lot of sway. It's not politicians. They're not going to care, and nobody's really listening. It's Taylor Swift and Beyonce and Kim Kardashian.
Those three. I hope you've hit them up in their DMs on Insta.
If anybody has their direct email, can you send it to me? Because we're doing some products and see what they can learn. But That's what it is. That it's the influencer thing. And that's also what keeps people who have a holistic approach to life, otherwise, it is what also keeps them ignoring synthetic fragrance as a category that they might look into. Because, I mean, we see this all the time, you know, people on the beach in their bikini with their green juice, and I'm drinking green juice, and I've swapped out my skincare, and I'm using this amazing natural skincare brand, and here's my Chanel number five. Like, that's such a disconnect. But there is a disconnect because we're not seeing that message come from the front or from the influencers. And, you know, a topic for another time, but fragrance feels like an ethereal experience. It doesn't actually feel like a substance.
Yeah.
So I'm inclined to put it away because is it even a thing? It's not like bread or laundry detergent where I can feel it, see it. You know, it's just a spray and it's gone, and, yeah, whole nother conversation now.
Which is interesting because it takes me to my first experience with your perfume, which was that wonderful feeling, because I have been using essential oils for years, and I've been, you know, sitting here making little roller bottles of my attempts at lovely blends and rolling them up and down my arms, and, you know, it was wonderful. I mean, I love essential oils, but having the experience of actually being able to spray a perfume in a lovely glass bottle onto my arm, it was just... It's emotive, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the emotion of it is what keeps people coming back to their Chanel number five, or the perfume that their mum used to wear for 20 years, or the fragrance they bought for their wedding. And we can't let it go. And I totally get that. It's a very emotional experience. And it's very hard when people think about even making the switch. How do I do that and not honor something of my history, my memory, the things that make me feel nurtured? Hopefully that's where one seed can kind of help people to make a switch, where you feel like you're making a sideways switch as opposed to, oh, now I have to get rid of it and just use essential oils. And I love essential oils too, but it's not the same experience as spraying on a perfume that has complexity, that has layers, that tells a story. It's story and emotion and memory that connects us to fragrance. It happens in your limbic system, so there's a physiological response. Scent and memory, emotion, behavior, even our desire for sex, all happens in the limbic system, and it's all connected to fragrance. It's how the body works. So it is a very emotive topic for a lot of people. And so it's hard. It's hard to get rid of fragrance. It's hard to get rid of something that you're so connected to. But if you can find a natural perfume that makes you have a similar experience, that's a beautiful thing, because obviously we're trading toxin for non-toxin, and we're still feeding our need for nurture.
It's very confusing though, isn't it? That for the listeners who are wanting to make a transition to a natural fragrance, I mean, it's so difficult for them to know, even now after having listened to you, it's difficult for them to know how to where to even start and how to distinguish between a generally natural product and a synthetic one, isn't it? So unless they've got a company like yours that has trademarked the nothing to hide, you know, you list 100% of ingredients, we know that we know what we're getting. But what would you say to someone? Of course, they are only going to want to buy one seed now, that's clear. But let's say that one seed suddenly wasn't available for the day. Where would they start? How?
Not at David Jones or Mecca, and I wish they would. So David Jones or Mecca, please call us, because we have a conversation to have. You at the moment, where you start is you look for the portals where you're already buying more natural products, your favorite natural skincare brands, etc. So the starting point is knowing where to buy the fragrance. We, by the way, are at Priceline, so that's massive for the natural perfume industry to crack a commercial market like that. So that, you know, the market is speaking and the big businesses are responding. So that's awesome. Where do you start if you're looking for natural? You want to look for a product that says it is 100% natural. So if somewhere on the packaging it doesn't say 100% natural, you can guarantee that product is synthetic, because the marketing speaks so much to like if the product is natural, that's a big marketing it's a thing that you can use in marketing to entice people. So the fact that something isn't saying it's natural, it's definitely not natural. So if you're looking for 100% natural and it doesn't say that on the packaging, it's not a brand for you. Transparency is awesome. Not many brands are being transparent, but I would prefer to see a brand that says 81.7% natural. And okay, I know that there's still a large percentage of synthetic, but at least they're disclosing what percentage of natural is in there. That's a really good starting point. But look for things that are 100% natural. Look for brand positioning statements. So look at the brand's Instagram, like all their social media, their website. What's the general feeling that you're getting? Do you feel like it's kind of smoke and mirrors? Are they saying what they're doing? Do they have supporting evidence to say this is why we're doing what we're doing, like journal articles or affiliation with companies like safecosmetics.org or something like that? Do they have badges like certified natural or certified organic? Who are they aligning themselves with? If none of that stuff is there, you can guarantee that that company is more profit driven or driven by the bandwagon rather than by the value. So that's probably a really good place to start. The other thing I would say is that price is not necessarily an indicator. It is sometimes, and if you're buying a perfume for $20, that's not natural, I can tell you right now, because you can't make a natural perfume for that. At the same time, if you're spending $400, it doesn't mean that your perfume contains any more natural ingredients than your $20 bottle. And the last thing I would say is don't confuse notes with ingredients. So if something says apple blossom and yak's milk and musk from the rainforest, whatever, it sounds like, oh, it's definitely natural. It's poetry. So notes is purely poetry. What you want to look at is ingredients, actual ingredients. So hopefully that's a few tips that give people a starting point anyway.
The poetry in your wonderful product descriptions is quite beautiful, taking me to Scandinavian forests, timber cabins. And I've learned a lot about this because having an online store with lots of different products on it, Meta doesn't like me making any hint of a health claim about anything. And the beautiful way you've written your product descriptions enables you to sort of get, help people feel into the scent, rather than making any health claims, which we can't do.
We would never make a health claim about our products anyway. Like we're not, while we consider ourselves a wellness company as much as we consider ourselves a fragrance company, it's because of our motives and what we're trying to achieve. But we're not telling you that spray this perfume and you're never going to get sick or anything like that. It's
No,
not.
that's good.
Yeah, but the poetry is important. So, like I said at the start, there's a reason that we love the idea of poetry and smoke and mirrors around fragrance. We want it to feel ethereal and special, and we want it to tell a story about who we are and our journey or where we want to be. So, and I, you can probably tell just from the way I speak as well, I absolutely love poetic language. And so you'll find that in the 1C products, and every product tells a story. It all has a story. There's a starting point. A lot of it is my own personal experience or my understanding of human nature and the things that motivate us and the things that make us cry and the things that make us connect. So yeah, that language to me is really important. I think to have language that drips with sensorial overtones is a really good way to choose a fragrance. But don't let that be the deciding factor, because that can just be smoke and mirrors to cover what's actually going on underneath if there's no other substance there.
So Liz, what's actually, I want to go back to Priceline because you jumped to that before I had an opportunity to congratulate you on that, because that was a massive career milestone for you, wasn't it?
Massive. Yeah,
Massive.
career milestone for us, yes, but more than that, it felt like a milestone for the industry. Like if you asked me 10 years ago, I mean, we would love to have been in majors, but majors have been very resistant to natural anything, let alone fragrance. So to me, this is the market cracked open, and consumers are speaking about what they want, and big businesses are starting to open their minds to that, which is incredible. I'm super, super proud of that for our industry. And yes, for our company, because it's been nearly 15 years of hard work, but more proud of this potentially opens the floodgates, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, congratulations. What an achievement. Yeah. And so what's next for One Seat? And if, for listeners that don't know, you have more than just perfumes.
Yes. Yeah. We also have a home fragrance range, which we call Laundrette. So it's room sprays. It's also things you can add to your laundry routine. So Laundrette is a beautiful collection, again, 100% natural. We just launched in November the first of our probiome products. So it's a hand and body wash probiome. This is now going down a rabbit hole, but it's following my passion, which is for functional product. And so this particular product and then the range which will follow it is about creating products that do more than just do no harm, but they actually enhance health. So that will be followed with some body oils, lotions, other products that you can apply to your skin that enhance your health, enhance your immune system, things like that. So that's definitely where we're heading. We've got a new fragrance coming out later this year, and I'll just quietly tell your massive audience a secret. It's called Halo, and it will be launching. I love it, and I don't hold these babies very close because they're all my babies, right? I'm not allowed to love any one of them. But there is a poem as well that I've already written, and I released a poetry book in December called Soul Faction, which is on the website. But there's a Halo poem in there, and the Halo story I absolutely love. So that one's coming out, I believe it's in September, which will be a beautiful ethereal, it's magnolia, but a very, very light, it's very sheer. It's kind of like, it's a veil basically is what it is. And the story of Halo is essentially the story of never, ever, ever growing up as a woman. So stay
never growing up.
Never growing up.
Oh, stay sorry, I heard that as throwing up. I thought I'd better clarify. Growing up.
No, it's about staying childlike your whole life and about seeing the world through childlike eyes and making flower crowns and,
how like beautiful.
So that's the story of Halo. So I'm super excited about that. And then we're working at the moment with a place and a person in the States. So we're hoping to really crack the US market this year.
Wow.
Poised on that for a few years, and then COVID hit and that all got put on the back burner.
But that old thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that thing? So yeah, there's lots coming up, and we just want to keep, honestly, what we want to keep doing is I guess, somebody said recently you're pioneers, and I'd never thought of that because, as I said in the beginning, I just back myself and I just do stuff. But I think that's what we really want to do, just keep making inroads for the wellness industry at large, but for brands that are wanting more for the consumer and brands that are values driven, and for ourselves as well. We just want to keep pushing into new territory, educating, inspiring, and having conversations that need to be had. And I don't want to back away from that. So
yeah.
That's where we're going.
Well, Liz, on behalf of all of us, thank you so much for all the work that you've done, for all of your education and this beautiful fragrance range. I want to ask you, I have a feeling you won't want to answer the question, do you have a favourite fragrance in your range?
It's Halo.
Right.
I don't.
You'd say that.
But I'll tell you what the secret about a lot of perfumers is we don't often wear perfume. And I think part of that is because I love to connect to my environment in an olfactory way. So my friends will tell you I'm constantly like, pick this, smell that, holding things under their nose and smelling my coffee. And I like to immerse myself in the olfactory world. But when I do wear a fragrance, yes, it is Halo, which I formulated already a few months ago. That's frequently used, or Tides, which is our massive, massive bestseller, which we launched a year ago. It's already won a few awards. And the other one that I love to wear in the winter is Solitude, which is that cabin in the woods kind of.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, so that's kind of the ones I tend to lean to. But otherwise, you can just find me with my nose buried in a pile of magnolias somewhere.
Sounds divine. Liz, thank you so much. That was so informative and so inspiring. And I'm just really, really grateful for your time.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for having me. What a delight.
This was episode 59 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. You'll find Liz and her business One Seed Perfume on Instagram at One Seed Perfumes, and all further links to her podcast and website in today's show notes over at theholisticingredient.com/59. As always, if you're enjoying the series and you've 2 minutes to leave a review on your favorite podcast app, I'd truly appreciate it. Until next time, stay curious.